Does not seem possible, but the election, the November 6th election, is less than 3 weeks away. We are definitely in the final stretch, and we are also on the final stretch of our series of Political Perspectives programs on WFSU-FM. Up until next Thursday, we have been talking to the candidates and discussing the issues in Tallahassee and Leon County, and this morning we continue that honorable tradition with the contenders for the Second Judicial Circuit State Attorney's Office. I'm Tom Flanagan. Good to have you at the other end of the radio waves and the telephone lines and the email connection, too. And before we begin, a reminder that you can always give your input here on the program at 414-1234. Local number, long distance is 800-926-8809. Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email address. And along with the standard radio microphones, we also have the TV cameras in the room because we are taping. We are recording, if you will. We don't use tape anymore. Our proceedings today, so we can broadcast it later on our sister operation for FSU, which is Comcast Channel 4. We start off with, and we did this by a drawing of lots this morning before you folks even got here this morning, and the challenger, Pete Williams, will be kind of kicking us off here with our discussion of the Second Judicial Circuit State Attorney's Office. Mr. Williams, a little bit of background on yourself, sir.
All right, well, thank you, and good morning, Tom. I am... I guess my family history goes deep back into the Panhandle. My family roots are from Jackson County, but my father was a grew up fourth generation peanut farmer and couldn't wait to leave the farm. So he had a wonderful career with Pan Am and took us children all over the world. But I went to college at Yale. I got a BA in economics. I went to Stanford University. Got a master's in business administration, and then law school at Florida. Came back to the Panhandle after law school, worked as an assistant state attorney for almost 10 years in the First Judicial Circuit, which is Pensacola. Moved to Tallahassee in the 90s to work for General Butterworth. And I was in the antitrust section, and I actually was Florida's lawyer on the case against Microsoft, which there's still a lot of debate on who won that case. But I think we accomplished something, which is competition was preserved in that market. I then was appointed by Charlie Crist to serve as Florida's statewide prosecutor, which is a large office of 42 prosecutors located around the state. And we focused on organized crime, white-collar crime, public corruption, internet crimes, frauds. Worked with 100 different law enforcement agencies a year in that job. And our prosecutors were spread across the state in 8 offices, but I was based here. And since then, I've served as Inspector General at 2 large agencies, Health Administration and Education, where I work to preserve tax dollars and keep our programs safe from fraud and waste. Thank you.
Well, we will talk to the incumbent in the race, too, who is Willie Meigs. And Mr. Meigs, 28 years you have been the state attorney for the Second Judicial Circuit. So very few folks probably listening right now can even remember a time when there was not a Willie Meigs in that particular position. But before that, how did you become the state attorney for Second Judicial Circuit? What happened before that?
Okay, well, before I went to law school, I was a police officer here with Tallahassee and also a deputy sheriff. I spent 9 years in law enforcement, really whetted my appetite for the law and being in the courtroom. During the time that I was the last really 6 years of my law enforcement time, I was an investigator. In those days, we didn't have all these divisions. We did most everything. So I worked narcotics, homicide, sexual batteries, larcenies, burglaries, all of those things. Obviously, I spent a lot of time in the courtroom testifying as a witness. I've testified when Mr. Hopkins was state attorney. He held the office for over 30 years. Then I testified and was hired by Harry Morrison, who held the office for a good long time. While I was in the courtroom testifying, I would watch prosecutors, and I stayed and observed closing arguments, opening statements, all the things I could observe. And I think it made me a better officer. But I also said, you know, I could do that. My only impediment was no law degree. So I managed to get myself in Florida State University Law School, and I became a prosecutor. The last day of law school, I was hired as an assistant state attorney. I did that for 7.5 years. Prosecuted my first murder case after I'd been with the office 2 years. I prosecuted numerous murder cases. I prosecuted just about every kind of crime that is imaginable. I was assigned for a short time over in Jefferson County, where I did everything from DUI to open container to first-degree murder, sexual battery, capital cases. So my entire career has been here. I was born here. I love this community. I've served here for, when you put it all together, including my law school, it's 47 years. And so I love my job, love what I do, and I think we do a very good job.
But even after 47 years, you're going for another 4-year term. You would think at this point you might say, boy, done a good job, and hey, I just want to spend some more time with the grandkids and, you know, go out fishing and that sort of thing.
Well, you know, I hear people say that. You know, I've known people who say, gosh, I hate to go to work. You know, I got this much time left. I enjoy going to work every day. I very seldom am off. And, well, really, you're never off because they'll call you at home if you're off, but if they need you. But I love going to work. I love what I do. I think I make a difference. I try to make a difference every day. That's one of the questions I ask myself. Did what I do today, did it make a difference? Is our community a better place? And I try to instill that in our people in the office, that if they didn't make a difference today, it was not a good day. And so I think we have lots of good days, and I enjoy going, and I enjoy trying. I'm certainly not ready to go to the farm.
Well, which brings us back to Mr. Pete Williams. Why do you think the voters of the Second Judicial Circuit should say, Willie, it's been a long, fun run, but time for you to step down and bring some new blood in?
Well, as you might imagine, after 28 years, things can get off track. I think the last 4 years, is if we just focus on that, Mr. Meigs has not been engaged in his office's performance. There's been too many controversial cases. Too many young prosecutors are leaving because they say it's no longer fun to work there. They're not empowered to do the right thing. The focus on the office is more on winning than as to justice, and hope to get into some of these cases in the show here. But I'm running to invigorate the office, to bring a new perspective on things. And you mentioned earlier during a break that we are very different in our philosophies of what a prosecutor's office should do. I would be more proactive to prevent crime. Nobody wins when you prosecute somebody. There's two mothers that are devastated, two families. We need to do more to keep that death or sexual battery from happening, and I don't think we're doing enough now.
Okay. Mr. Meigs, your thoughts on that as far as being proactive and in kind of preventing crime before it starts. Is that really the function of the prosecutor's office? Or?
Absolutely not. Those are the jobs for the community, for the commissions, for the legislature, for law enforcement. They have crime prevention programs all over, and we participate in those crime prevention programs. I go – I speak regularly, certainly not disengaged. I'm somewhere most every day doing something for the cause of the office. I was just speaking to one of your folks out in the hall about the Citizens Academy. That's crime prevention. I do a 3-hour class to every Citizens Academy at the Sheriff's Office. Certainly are engaged. We in the prosecutor's office – and I think we'll probably get into this a little bit as the program goes on, because I keep hearing ads that talk about we need to – the state attorney makes arrests. We don't make arrests. Law enforcement makes arrests. Once they're made, we have to deal with it, and we do deal with it, and we try – I think we deal with it effectively, and if time permits, we'll talk about that. I'm sure there's some issues that we need to address on individual cases if Mr. Williams chooses to do that. I think it's kind of interesting, though, that someone sits out and says, okay, we got this case or that case. Since I've been state attorney, we've prosecuted over 132,000 felonies in this circuit. That's a lot of cases. We get 5,000 to 6,000, sometimes 7,000 felonies a year, not including misdemeanors and juveniles. And those all come to us. We don't go out and make arrests. We're not out in the street. Law enforcement, as we're sitting here today, I'm confident that several arrests will be made that we will find out and we will deal with in the state attorney's office when the stuff comes to us.
Okay. And Mr. Williams, I know you've been critical of some specific cases, and we can talk about those certainly. But isn't it kind of easy to second guess? I mean, anybody, whether it's the procedures of a law enforcement agency or how the state attorney's office prosecutes a particular case or how the public defender even, you know, does their job to sit back and say, yeah, you should have sort of quota done this.
Well, of course, the jury system is we have is the best in the world, but it's not perfect. You can't guarantee success all the time. But you can look at philosophy, charging decisions. You can look at the attitude of the office. You can look at how the prosecutors treat the defense attorneys. You can look at what's the tone of the office. It's not collaborative right now. It's too contentious with judges, with defense attorneys. And I stand for a more an office with a bigger heart and more civility, basically. Defense attorneys complain that they're bullied into pleas for their client. The office is known for stacking, adding charges if you don't go along with the first recommendation. Some of this behavior, I think, is not appropriate for a prosecutor. Let me jump to the end. A case, if there is no evidence in a case, this office is known for coercing a plea for something. I believe ethically a prosecutor needs to dismiss the case if there's no evidence. Mr. Meggs's office is known for filing on vast majority of arrests, much higher rate than the rest of the state. And I should note, I've been endorsed by the PBA. They've told me they trust me to guide them. There'll be a lot of arrests that you should choose not to file on, because whatever happened tonight, the officers had to protect the community, had to protect themselves. But then when we go and review it, we'll say we're not going to pursue it with charges. His office tends to file too many charges, and you'll see that a lot of these are bad charges because his jury trial conviction rate is very low here, much lower than the rest of the state. In Leon County, it's 65% over the last 4 years. There's 241 trials in Leon County or in the Second Circuit, last time I checked, that his office lost because the cases were simply bad cases to pursue.
Okay, we'll be right back talking the candidates for Second Judicial Circuit State Attorney. We'll be right back. Come November 6th, boy, a lot of decisions facing folks in Tallahassee, Leon County, and actually nationwide. But here in the Second Judicial Circuit, which encompasses a big swath of North Florida, we're going to be choosing a state attorney. A longtime incumbent, Willie Meggs, has the job now. And former statewide prosecutor Pete Williams is vying for that position on his own. We'll be making that decision. Mr. Meggs, Mr. Williams had talked a little bit about some cases, and I remember following a couple such as, the Ray Sanson, the former Speaker of the Florida House, that case that you prosecuted, and there were a number of others that there seemed to be a big hue and cry, either that you were overly aggressive or not aggressive enough in some cases.
Well, kind of just responding to some of the remarks before, I'm really not concerned about hurting a defense attorney's feelings as a prosecutor. So, their concerns are not really part of my concern. We work in an adversarial system, which is the best system in the world. And when two adversaries come together and hash out the issues and deal with them, generally you can come up with a just result. And, if the defense attorneys feel that they're being picked on, well, bless their hearts. I feel certainly sorry that they feel like that they're coerced into doing something. I don't find that to be the case. I think our defense bar here is very strong, a lot of good lawyers, and we go into the adversarial process quite regularly with them. But as to the filing of charges, police, we have rules of criminal procedure that we go by. The rules are basically very simple. Officers can make an arrest when they have probable cause. Probable cause is reason to believe that a crime has been committed and the person you're going to arrest is the person who committed that crime. When that information comes to us, we look at it from a little bit different standard. And the standard we are required to look at it is there a standard? And I would say like on a scale of 0 to 100, probable cause gets you up to about 50. But on a scale of 0 to 100, our standard to look at that set of facts is probably up around 80. We need to look at it from a reasonable likelihood of a conviction. So we look at it a little stronger. My philosophy about that is if the officers have made an arrest and there's probable cause and we don't have all that we need, we work toward getting that. We look at the report. We look at the information. We talk to the officers. We consult. We have investigators in our office, and we'll make a case stronger. Sometimes after an arrest, the case gets stronger and it gets better. Sometimes it stays the same. Sometimes it gets weaker. And sometimes we end up dropping a case, sometimes after we file a case. And you know, in filing cases, it's very important for everyone to know that we do not have the luxury of waiting months and weeks. We have a speedy trial rule. We have to file a case within 21 days of the arrest, or the defendant is entitled to a preliminary hearing, which we don't have time for. And so we have to make decisions pretty rapidly. And we have an intake process that does that. And then the standard for a jury to look at what we've looked at as a reasonable likelihood of a conviction is beyond and to the exclusion of every reasonable doubt. And those standards that we adhere to is what makes our country and our justice system a great system. And I'm very proud to be part of it. I'm very proud of what our officers and our office does and our attorneys do in the office in making those just, sound, and right decisions. Now, as we get to our conviction rate when we go to trial, you know, it would be real easy. I have so many cases that I would love for the defense to say, we want a trial. They don't want a trial when we have ironclad, solid evidence. They don't want that trial. They want the trial when our evidence is not as strong. So we try the tough cases. Sometimes we try them because defense just won't plea. I'll give you an example. We just convicted Gary Michael Hilton for first-degree murder. That was really a pretty easy case from a prosecutor's standpoint. We had overwhelming evidence. But the sentence that we were seeking in that case was death, because he was a serial killer, and I believe he deserved death. And we sought the death penalty. Not many people plead guilty and don't want a trial if the state is seeking death. So we ended up trying that case. Very good case. Those are the kind of cases we'd love to try. And when we got done with that case, we had a unanimous recommendation from death from 12 of our citizens, and very proud of those 12 citizens. You know, in Bundy, we only had a 7-5 recommendation, I believe. So Gary Michael Hilton got a 12-0 recommendation. I think we did the right thing. That was an easy case to try. Many of our cases are not easy cases to try, but we're not going to win all of our cases. Tragic case, the case at the Elks Club, tremendous prosecution, great job. Jury came back not guilty. It was a gang case. And I remember standing there as when the verdict came back. By the way, I was engaged. I stay engaged in the office. And I remember when the verdict came back, and the director of the boys' choir, it was one of his boys that was killed, he was outside the courtroom weeping because he had watched the entire trial. And his statement, I heard him make the statement, I don't know which trial the jury was watching. So but it requires a unanimous verdict, and we didn't have it there. But would I try that case again? In a heartbeat, we would try that case again.
Okay. And Mr. Williams, well, your philosophy, how would you approach these sorts of things differently, if you would?
Well, first of all, one of the things Mr. Meg said is true, that just when you think you've seen it all, and some other case comes in, so you can never say you've seen it all as a prosecutor. The Gary Hilton case, I don't think anybody could have lost that case. That was an ironclad case, a man that's nothing but a human predator, and everybody knew it. And the Elks Club case, I think it's a case we should have won. You know, a point blank shot in a car at somebody. But
no, those were not the facts, but that's okay.
Now, as to Mr. Meggs's point about you got to try the bad cases, so does every other state attorney's office in the case. And their jury trial conviction rates are high 80s or 90%. So they do a much better job of what cases to pursue. Sometimes another criticism I made of the office, and I get this a lot from law enforcement, cases take too long to get through the state attorney's office right now. If a man steals a package of ham from Winn-Dixie, just you know, a second-degree misdemeanor. He shouldn't sit in jail for 6 months when the sentence he would have got would have been maybe a few days in jail. I would cite one case where it was just way too long, the Angela Prim case in McCulloch County. She was charged with killing her husband, and it took the state attorney's office 4 years, six prosecutors, scores of hearings, numerous judges to determine that it was self-defense. Now, nobody can defend how the evidence could have not been the same the first month as 4 years later, and why it would take 4 years to make what they suddenly announced after 4 years is the just and right decision. These are signs that the office is not functioning efficiently.
Mr. Meggs, what's your case look like right now?
Each attorney in our office has a pending caseload, especially the line attorneys. Like, you know, and I'll just have to use Leon County because it varies from county to county. The average caseload for an attorney just handling a regular caseload, not a supervisor, and just the run-of-the-mill cases, they will have 100 pending cases on average every week. Now, it's not the same 100. They generally each week dispose of 15 to 20, and they pick up 15 to 20 new ones. So that is a flowing caseload. Each attorney has a day in court. We have somewhat little control. It's kind of interesting that the state attorney gets blamed for a case taking 4 years. All a defense attorney has to do is, if they want a trial rapidly, is demand one. And we're required to give them one within 60 days. And so to lay a blame on the state attorney's office for delaying a case 4 years is ludicrous. If the defendant wanted a speedy trial, if the defendant wanted to move forward, if the defendant was interested in it, if the defense attorney was interested, they'll have a trial within 60 days on every case that they demand. Usually a delay works to the advantage of the defense, and the defense delays as much as they can delay.
Okay. And Mr. Williams, how would you handle situations like that? If you had an obstructive defense attorney, let's say,
well,
anything you can do to kind of, you know, help to push him along there?
It's like many murder cases, they do continue forever. The Angela Prim case was dropped when the state attorney said there was no evidence to pursue it. That's 4 years later. It's not the defense attorney. It's the state attorney concluding after 4 years. And I think the buck should stop with the state attorney in this case and not any assistant. That case was unconscionable that it took so long. The defense attorneys tried to convince the state attorney for 4 years until they finally concluded, yes, the self-defense that she was alleging was an accurate portrayal of what happened.
A chance here for you to talk about how you would kind of rearrange the state attorney's office, given, you know, your priorities and your philosophy and how you'd like to get the thing organized so it works better than what you say it is now.
Well, you know, I believe in a lean structure. In other words, there will be very few levels between me and the assistant state attorneys. Each office needs to have a chief that's in charge of that county's prosecution efforts, maintain decent relationships with not just law enforcement, but the community. So I'd have strong chiefs in each office with full authority to make the appropriate decisions under the philosophy that I would set. There would be very few levels between that chief and myself. And the way I've run offices in the past, I'm accessible to any victim or attorney that has a complaint about anybody, and I find that's the easiest and quickest way to deal with things. So I would have in each county, I would have regular scheduled office hours so that anybody could come see me. One change I would make in the office is there is no career criminal unit that the statute requires, because a long time ago the legislature realized many of our crimes, it's like frequent customers in the airlines, are committed by the same people. And then we've called them habitual offenders or career criminals, and we need to do a better job using intelligence, detecting, putting cases together. Give you an example. Right now there's a bunch of smash and grabs going on in cars in Pensacola. It sure looks like it's the same people. It's the same MO each time. So we should, you know, jump on that and proactively try to determine who's doing it and put an end to it. If I'm right, it's just a few criminals doing a lot of damage to people's cars and you know, violating their feeling of safety. So another area that I would put more focus on is sexual offenses. I would do more training and more experienced trained prosecutors who would make sure that those are the hardest cases to win quite often. And I don't see enough cases out of the state attorney's office now. There should be more focus on that.
Okay. I can recall when there seemed to be a whole bunch of sexual assault cases, particularly in and around the university, Florida State University, and that seems to have ebbed to a degree. But any ideas that, say, for the next 4 years, Mr. Mays, you'd like to incorporate in the office or keep on keeping on or what?
Well, you know, I think it's odd that he would have a senior attorney or chief attorney in this in the counties. I don't know why we didn't think of that. We've only been doing that for 28 years. Each county has a chief assistant. They report directly to me. They contact me about most everything that goes on and keep me informed about it. But as it pertains to career criminal units, we have an intake process that I think other state attorneys have modeled themselves after around the state. Our intake process, when it comes in, we classify if they're a reoffender, if they're a 10-20 life, if they're a sexual battery, if they are a capital case. And we basically color code our files. And a red file means this is a bad hombre, and this is a bad defendant. And that applies to lots of cases. Those red files are just significant in that they go to the most senior attorneys. When he talks about he would have more training, I just had one of our assistants not long ago pull me his training record. And I'm looking at it as I sit here right now. He has gone through 11 specialized training classes. He is a teacher at some of these schools because of his expertise. These involve arson. These involve sexual battery. They involve DUI manslaughter, DNA testimony, all of those things. We have in Florida probably the absolute best training that is available in the country through the Florida Prosecuting Attorneys Association. We have speakers who come in who are the best in the nation. Also, I happen to be a board member representing Florida with the National District Attorneys Association. We have a National District Attorneys College. It was in Columbia, South Carolina. It's moving to Salt Lake City, but they do regional trainings around the country. I send our people to those, and that is the best in the world that our folks get. Many of them have gone to the prosecutor's boot camp, to the advanced prosecutor's courses, to the administrative courses, to sexual battery, to child pornography, to domestic violence. We go to all of those things. We have the best training available. And since I'm not engaged in the office, I do a personal training of every new assistant for a two-hour class on the methods of prosecuting and trying a case. And many of the lawyers, even today, our senior lawyers, use the same method that I have given them in this two-hour class. And I have a brochure, a pamphlet that I put out that gives them an order of trial and how to do them. So all the things that he's going to do, not only do we do them well, and we've been doing them well for 28 years.
How's your turnover rate right now with your attorneys?
We hear that it's just absolutely awful, but This year in 2012, we've lost 6 lawyers. 2 of them moved out of town. One of them we had hired back. She went back to Jacksonville. One moved to Georgia. One lawyer went to a state agency making more money than he can make with us. And 2 others went to private practice. We've lost 6 lawyers this year.
Okay.
In 11 months.
And Mr. Williams, what would you do to maybe even keep some of those 6 from moving on?
Well, I would agree that he's got a lot of good, experienced prosecutors there. It's just not enough right now. And there are a lot of opportunities for training. All of us received them as assistant state attorneys. It's a matter of the focus of the office and whether you set up special units to attack certain crimes. Many of the young assistants who've left told me it's not just the salary. It's no longer fun to work there. They don't have authority to do things. They don't have authority to do what's right. I know one woman who quit because Mr. Meggs ordered to do something she felt was unconscionable to a defendant. She quit and testified for that defendant at his hearing that the sentence the state attorney wanted was unreasonable. So I would empower all the young attorneys to make the right decisions, to follow their sense of justice in a case. It's not about winning. It's not about what's the maximum sentence you can get, which some of the prosecutors in office have that attitude. It's justice. And a prosecutor has his unique role in the system. He's an officer of the court. It's quite different than the defense attorney's role, which is to represent his client jealously. Prosecutor's client is the state or justice. That's my position.
4141234, we have the candidates for the state attorney of the Second Judicial Circuit with us on Political Perspectives, 800-926-8809 and perspectives at WFSU.org. We'll be right back. Back on Political Perspectives, the incumbent state attorney for the Second Judicial Circuit, Willie Meggs, and the challenger, Pete Williams, here with us today. And a reminder that you can also see this Perspectives program on our sister broadcast operation for FSU, which is Comcast Channel 4, Wednesday, October 17th, 8 in the evening, the same time Saturday, October 20th, Sunday, October 21st at 8:30 in the eventide, and then Monday, October 22nd, a final showing at 7 o'clock in the evening. What do we do about statutes that are passed by the Florida legislature with which we may have philosophical or even legal disagreement? And I'll start with you, Mr. Williams. I'm thinking again of Stand Your Ground. And I believe Mr. Meggs has come out in opposition to that, even though it is the law and, you know, we must operate under. How do you deal with things like that? The legislature comes out with something and you think it's either unworkable or you just have real problems with it. What do you do as a prosecutor?
Well, you know, you take an oath to defend the Constitution and enforce the laws. So, you know, prosecutors have to enforce the laws. Now, there are some laws that we have long since stopped enforcing. We still have a cohabitation misdemeanor on the books if you're unmarried couple. So we have learned to get away from laws that the legislature has decided not to remove. But I'm glad you asked me about Stand Your Ground. A lot of people have a misconception about that. They think it's extending the Castle Doctrine to the streets. Now, the Castle Doctrine lets you in your own home to presume somebody's there to kill or hurt you if they come in. You don't have to show you had any kind of reasonable fear. So those are much clear cut. Stand Your Ground did not change the previous law on self-defense that we had. And I tried many cases under the law of self-defense in Florida. It still requires the person who shoots the attacker to have a reasonable belief of great bodily harm or death. Did not change that. The only thing it changed is the common law from England required you to retreat if possible. Now, most of these cases, there was never a real ability to retreat. So that change in Stand Your Ground, the no longer requiring you to retreat, should not be that significant. Self-defense cases were always difficult to try. There were a few I lost because the person shooting and the person who attacked him had a bad reputation for violence, and the jury determined that they couldn't beyond a reasonable doubt convict him. I am kind of astounded at how many extra cases, you know, given that the law hasn't really changed, I blame the prosecutors for losing a lot of cases. They're not trying to right in front of a jury. So I find stand your ground as something the legislature decided to do. Prosecutors should enforce it, and I think it's easy to enforce. You still have to show a reasonable belief of great bodily harm or death. You can't just pull out a gun when you feel threatened. It has to be more than that.
No, okay. And Mr. Meigs, you've had some experience with this. I'm thinking specifically the Circle K shooting situation from a couple years ago where I believe Stand Your Ground was brought into that case, right?
Well, what Stand Your Ground did is it fixed a problem we didn't have and created a problem we didn't need. And we use this term retreat, and the law has always been that anyone can defend themselves from death or great bodily harm or another from death or great bodily harm if it was reasonably necessary. What Stand Your Ground did is it gives a person absolute immunity. Before it could be a jury question, was this person's use of force reasonable under the circumstances? All of us had a duty always, except in your home, to avoid using deadly force if we could reasonably and safely do so. Now you do not have to avoid using deadly force because you can stand your ground. And so if you and I decided to go get in a gunfight and we go out in the parking lot and I shoot you and kill you, I was standing my ground. Before, I would have had a duty to use a little more judgment and not go out in the parking lot with you to get into a gunfight. I could have avoided that safely by not going there. You no longer have that duty, and a person is given absolute immunity, and it's a court that does it. The court has a hearing. It's like a motion to dismiss. The case is dismissed, and they have immunity from prosecution. It's a tragic, horrible thing to have to tell the mother of a young kid that came here to Florida A&M University and was senselessly shot down in the street, left laying in the street while the assailant ran off, shot in the head, killed, and we have to tell the mother, sorry, Stand Your Ground says he could shoot him because he stuck his head in a car. It was not reasonable. That person would have been convicted before the Stand Your Ground law for a senseless, needless killing of a young black man. And so that's why I'm opposed to the Stand Your Ground law. It was not needed. It was not necessary. And it is correct. The self-defense is there. And no one can point to any abuse that the existing law was occurred before Stand Your Ground.
Yeah, so, except you're duty bound to prosecute under the law, right?
Well, we would look at, you know, we don't prosecute all. If it's a clear-cut case of self-defense, we would not prosecute that case. And we've had some of those, and we've not prosecuted those. If it is less than clear, you know, I use the term if it is reasonably necessary to defend yourself or another, that becomes a jury question, and a jury can decide. And we have to put our faith and trust in juries to do that. Sometimes they will say, yes, it was reasonably necessary and find a person not guilty, and self-defense works. But we ought to let that go to the hands of the jury, not in a strict liability sense that you have absolute immunity.
Okay, to the phones we go, which, by the way, 414-1234 and 800-926-8809. On line one is Joe, and thank you very much for your patience, Joe, and welcome to Perspectives.
I have a question for Mr. Williams. Mr. Williams, your personnel record indicates you've had 9 different jobs since graduating from law school, one for as few as 5 months, I believe. Would you comment on that for me, please?
Yes, thank you. I've been fortunate to have a lot of great assignments in state government. Job you're referring to, I was director of alcoholic beverages and tobacco when Charlie Crist appointed me statewide prosecutor. So each job I've left is because in that case I got appointed to another job and I had to resign. I think my public service record has something I'm proud of. I've never been terminated from a job. I've left to when I felt it was time to do something extra for the state, and I've had a great range of experience, sir.
And arguably, given today's environment, your tenure would have been even less if you'd been like a state agency head, because they seem to be dropping like flies at the moment. I was speaking with the two contenders for the state attorney of the Second Judicial Circuit, challenger Pete Williams, and the incumbent, who is Willie Meigs. Mr. Williams, your approach, though, to the prosecutorial function seems to be, not just, oh, we would reorganize the office and we would do things differently on an internal thing, but, you were taking, I think, some issue with the incumbent on exactly how you proceed with the prosecution. And you were saying that, the current rate of conviction is low in comparison to other places. How do you maximize that without doing, as you said, making it a just, hey, we got to win at all costs? How do you balance that out?
Well, there are many cases that I see in the system here that I don't think should be in the system. There are cases that are not appropriate for the criminal justice system. There's other ways to handle them. Example I've been speaking about is that two McClay baseball coaches recently got in a wrestling match. Nobody threw a punch. Nobody was hurt. That should have been handled by the school. But the state attorney's office filed charges, almost ruined a coach's life. And then after I qualify, Mr. Meigs comes in and says he's reviewed the file and he's going to be a good guy and drop charges. Well, I say the arrest should never happen. He should apologize for arresting that coach. And then I worry about whether are we focusing on real crime or are we just prosecuting cases because it's a technical violation and we can do it. That case was a battery. I can touch you right now, Tom. That's technically criminal battery if it's unwelcome. I hope you would agree with me that should not be in the criminal justice system. Now, if I threw a punch, that's different. So I don't think they do a good job of a sense of perspective here of the great power of the office. What should it be applied to? It shouldn't be applied to every little incident of misconduct. It should be applied where it's appropriate to prosecute somebody for a criminal offense.
Okay. And Mr. Can I
please address that?
Certainly. Sure. Go ahead.
That this McClay the law enforcement folks arrested this McClay coach. So an arrest, I didn't arrest anybody. When the case came in, we took a look at it. On the surface of what they wrote in the probable cause affidavit, there was a clear pushing of one of the coaches witnessed by several people. After the case came into our office, it did get called to my attention. I assigned one of our investigators, Erica Buckley, to investigate that case and go back in behind. And she went and interviewed every one of those baseball players on that baseball team. Many of them saw, and they would have testified had they been required to, against their coach. We looked at it back and forth, and we basically determined after we did a thorough investigation of that case that both of the coaches were kind of acting like jerks in front of the kids. It was over who was calling pitches in a game, I believe, up in Bainbridge, Georgia. And when they were coming back, they got into this pushing match because the two coaches were angry with one another. I considered filing charges against both of them for a public affray because they were acting so irrational in front of everyone. But, my witnesses in the case were going to be the kids. And as we've continued investigating this case, I didn't really want to put these high school kids, sophomores, juniors, and seniors, in a position of having to come down into the courtroom and testify against their coach. One of the coaches was fired. I actually called the headmaster at the school and said, I don't run your school, but if I were you, I'd fire them all and start over with a whole new batch. But that's their business. But I didn't feel like it was right to make young boys come in and testify against their coach or their teacher and be put in that spot. So in that case, I think we had a tremendous amount of justice, and I think the right thing was done, and I feel very good about it. I, one, didn't initiate this case. The law enforcement initiated it, brought it to us. The man had already been arrested. I can't unarrest him. And we did file an information. And then once I began to get more information about it, and that happens in every case that we do, we go back and look and we try to do the right thing. I am convinced that we did exactly the right thing in that case by not proceeding and putting these young kids who were in total turmoil at the school into a situation where they'd have to come in and testify against one of their teachers. And so I think we did the right thing. And I'm very proud of what we did, and I'm proud of the investigation that we conducted, and I believe we did the right thing across the board.
In a case like that, Mr. Williams, you had kind of the intervention of the state attorney in the case. So when do you think that's appropriate?
Well, I mean, what I stand for is that charges would not have been filed until that kind of investigation is done. I stand for not making mistakes that can ruin people's lives. He's admitting a mistake after the fact, after filing charges. I stand for don't arrest or don't charge people until you're sure. You can ruin people's lives. And
Pete, you can't ruin someone's life. He was already arrested. He's not going to be unarrested. It's in the system. And now it's in the system that the case was dropped. That is just borderline ridiculous to talk about I've ruined this person's life. He got arrested. I was home in bed asleep when he got arrested. I had nothing to do with his arrest.
You know, you had some very good assistants in the old days, Mr. Goodwin, who would have seen that come in and said to the sheriff's office, I'm not sure this is right. I'm confident he would have done that. Somehow that went through and charges were filed. It's filing charges that your office did, not the arrest.
We continue to investigate these cases right up until trial or until they're disposed of. We always have, and we always will. I remember hearing Bill Hopkins, who was a 30-year state attorney, one of six, by the way, that has served this circuit in the last 112 years, say we investigate it right up through and during trial. And if we get new information in the middle of a trial, we will do everything we can to get that to the forefront.
Well, folks, we could talk about this for the next hour, but unfortunately time – tempus fugit, as the old saying goes. That's about the only Latin I remember from high school. Mr. Williams, in about a minute or so, just give us a summation. Why, again, you should have the job and Mr. Meigs should go off fishing for a while.
Well, I think it is time for a new approach. I support many new, innovative, and cost-effective programs. I'm even talking about we need reentry programs. We need the attitude in the state attorney's office that we don't want them to come back and be arrested. We need to try harder. We have dangerous people that need to be incarcerated forever, but many of the people that process through the state attorney's office just need help. They have mental health issues. They have drug issues. I believe in drug court. I believe in mental health court. I think all of these are more effective at saving a life instead of throwing it away. So I think I'm clearly the more progressive candidate in this race. And I think particularly – let me focus on last comment, juvenile justice system. We have the highest incarceration rate here of juveniles in the state. That's throwing away a young life. I want to save them. I want more programs, more mentoring, faith-based mentoring programs. I want to make much greater effort to keep a juvenile from becoming a criminal.
Okay. And Mr. Meigs, why should you get another four?
Well, I don't want to become a social worker. I'm a prosecutor. Our system works when everyone in the system does their part. The police go out and investigate schools, churches, all of those folks go do all the other stuff. A prosecutor prosecutes. A prosecutor looks at the cases and we go into court. We do a very good job at what we do. And that's one of the reasons when you look around, this is why this city – and this community and this circuit is a very decent, fine, outstanding place to raise our children and our families. And I've worked and devoted my entire life. I haven't had 12 different jobs. The only job I've had is state attorney, assistant state attorney, and law enforcement officer. I have done that my entire adult life. And I'm very proud of what I've done. I'm very proud of this community, and I'm proud of the difference that we make in this community every day. And contrary to what was said here today, I am very much engaged in the office. I'm there every day. I'm usually one of the first people there. and I usually, a lot of days, am one of the last people there. I have an open door policy. Anybody, anytime, can come into my office. My phone number is in the phone book. I have people who call me at home saying they don't want to bother me at work. And so I'm available, accessible. I love this community. I love my job. I have the same passion for it today as I did when I first took office.
Second Judicial Circuit State Attorney, the incumbent Willie Meigs, and also Challenger Pete Williams. Thank both of you for coming in on Perspectives today.
Thank you.
Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance by Taylor Cox. And we see Mr. Lydell Rawls back there on the phones. Our production team from 4FSU, Paul Dam, Brian Roche, Mike Dunn, Sharni Howarth, and Suzanne Smith's been helping us out, too. I'm Tom Flanagan, inviting you to join us for more Political Perspectives through next Thursday right here.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.